This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ever heard of the Opium Wars? I bet you've at least heard the name. But the general idea, this took place in China, is that, hey, we want to soften this population up so we can take advantage of it. So let's get them on drugs. Let's drug them up. You know people on drugs. Maybe you yourself have struggled with drugs in the past, but it's a form of warfare. In the United States of America, we're drowning in drugs. I want to give all the credit in the world before we get to a bunch of cartel stuff to the Trump administration for pointing out things like fentanyl and what it's doing to us.
Today I'm taking one more step to protect Americans from the scourge of deadly fentanyl flooding into our country. With this historic executive order I will sign today, we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, which is what it is. No bomb does what this is doing. 200,000 to 300,000 people die every year that we know of. So we're formally classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction.
It is. It's a weapon of war. There are countries at war with us. And you can argue, and you're correct, that the Democrat Party and some losers in the Republican Party are helping. They're collaborating with other countries. But nevertheless, it is a war, and it is done with intent. Maybe you remember, it was kind of a news story that came and went, but you remember it wasn't long ago. We woke up one morning and we found out that the airspace over El Paso, Texas, was closed down. And then, but hold on, they were telling us that it was a drone? Well, here was Army Secretary Dan Driscoll talking about drones.
This problem is different from nearly anything we faced in a long time. It is a flying IED. And so this IED...
IED.
IED. Improvised explosive device. Right. They're cheap. You can 3D print them at home. And they cross borders incredibly quickly. And so what you basically need is a digital layer to exchange information and exchange sensing and allow the closest person on the ground or the closest effector on the ground to be able to take out a drone. And Senator Cotton is right. I mean, this is the threat of humanity's lifetime. What's occurring in Ukraine, what's happening in Russia, if you look at the speed and scale of the devastation that can come from drones, we as a federal government have got to lead on it. But I'm really optimistic. This is actually something we are doing right.
And here's the thing about drones. Everyone can have one. It's a frightening thing when you get a weapon that is capable of such destruction, but it's cheap, relatively. It's easily available. Everyone, you can have one. I can have one. I can go down to Radio Shack. Wait, I think they went out of business. I'm really old. I can go down to Best Buy right now, and I can buy a drone, and I can attach whatever I want to it. Everyone can have one. And we have a border with Mexico. The Mexican cartels run at least half of the states in Mexico. And we have to acknowledge that there is a deep, deep evil there. How evil are these cartels? Listen to this story from Tom Holman.
So we just found one 2 days ago, an example, 14-year-old little girl living with two adult males who trafficked her, and we found her, she's pregnant from trafficking, being forced into prostitution. 14 years old. So we're taking care of her, both physically and mentally. Despite what the media says, we're not heartless. We care about these kids. I'm a father. And the reason I'm so emotional and so hard, headstrong on this issue, because I've dealt with dying children throughout my career. I've held dying children. I've held dead children. I taught the little girls as young as 9 that were raped multiple times by the criminal cartels. I'll never forget it. When you get on your knees to talk to 9-year-old little girl, everything innocent and pure is ripped from her, and she don't believe in humanity anymore because you had a bunch of animals crawling on her and taking everything pure from her. You'll never forget it. That It's happening every day through this trafficking. And we're going to put an end to it.
It's hard to listen to. These people are around us. They're not just down in Mexico. They're not just down on the Texas southern border. These people are all throughout the United States of America. The cartels are something that has to be taken seriously. Drugs are something that has to be taken seriously. The threat of drone warfare has to be taken seriously. The Trump administration, but we finally have an administration that is taking this stuff seriously. But this is a threat, a significant threat. And I'm a husband. I'm a father. That could be the people I love. Could be the people you love tomorrow, today. Some drugged out maniac on the highway, some homicidal freak. I don't know. You don't know. This is a problem that is deadly, deadly serious. The cartels are not going away. When there's this much money in something, they're never going to go away. So we're going to dig into this. We're going to have a chat about it. Ammon Blair is here. He's a wealth of information on this stuff. Border Patrol forever, Army Intelligence. John Solomon is here. We have an incredible special for you tonight on I'm Right. We'll be back. I can't stand the big mobile companies, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. And it's not that I have a problem with the phones they sold me or the service necessarily. It's not that. I'm so tired of giving my money to companies that hate me and companies that use my money for these disgusting communist social causes. You remember all those Black Lives Matter protests? That was all corporate funding. They got corporate funding. Go look up your mobile company and see what they've done with your money. That money doesn't come from the clouds. They take your money and they send it to these dirty commies. Pure Talk doesn't do that. Whenever you read about Pure Talk giving back, you find out, oh wait, they helped the veteran back on his feet? Remember last Independence Day, they sent American-made flags to veterans. That's what Pure Talk does when they give back. That's the kind of company I like being part of. Switch, you save money. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. The cartels are movie characters for most people, to be honest with you. That's what they are. You know, we've all seen Sicario 8,000 times. At least all the dudes have. But they are real, and there are people who know a lot more about them than you and I do. And one of those people, he's one of my favorite guests. He's become one of my favorite guests on this show, Ammon Blair, senior fellow at the wonderful Texas Public Policy Foundation. I so, so adore them. All right, Ammon, before we get to the cartels, what is your background?
Sure. So I served a little over 10 years in the Department of Homeland Security with Border Patrol in South Texas. And then I served a little over 20 years in the U.S. Army, both as an enlisted soldier and as an officer. So in Marine talk, I was a Mustang. And then I also worked in the private sector for a private intelligence firm where we analyzed all the threats emanating from Mexico and around the world. That now occupy not only our border, but internally here in the United States.
Ammon, you call cartels hybrid war operators, a term I'd never heard before you started using it. It's your term. Explain yourself.
Sure. So, you know, there's actually a really good news article for an assessment on Small Wars Journal. So if your audience would like to go there, term is actually a military term when talking about threats. Hybrid meaning, say like if you have an insurgency. Well, what if they also aren't just doing tactics that fall in the realm of insurgency? What if they're also terrorist organizations? What else? What about if they're also conducting political warfare? What happens if they're also involved in the economies of the local area in terms of both licit and illicit? So what if this organization has the control and grasp or governance of every form and facet of a society? Well, then it's not just an insurgency. It's not just a foreign terrorist organization. It is a hybrid threat where they control every aspect in terms of the public safety, as well as the local military, as well as the local economics of a region. And so that's what the Mexican cartels are. Well, not every Mexican cartel organization. There are a multitude of them. So you have like the Gulf Cartel that's in South Texas. You have Cartel del Noreste, which is in mid-Texas by Laredo. You have the Juarez Cartel La Linea, which is there in Juarez and south of El Paso. And then Sinaloa Cartel and so forth. And then the largest cartel, Cartel Jalisco New Generation, with its base of operations in Michoacán and Jalisco. Now, you and I talked, I think, my first episode with you, and I got a lot of hate mail from it about how the cartels control agriculture and how we are indebted to the country of Mexico in terms of our ability to feed ourselves and our ability to produce the fruits and vegetables that are now on the new pyramid that was placed by RFK Jr., and that we are beholden to the government of Mexico and the farmers and ranchers there to be able to feed ourselves. Well, since farming and agriculture is a major part of our society, we all of us have to eat, all of us have to drink water. So in order to control all of us or to control their forms of society, the Mexican cartels or any hybrid threat would also need to control all the natural resources. And food is just one of them.
All right, let's tick down a few of these. You mentioned they're terrorist organizations. Now, it's not going to shock a single person watching that cartels would commit horrible acts of violence. That's just part and parcel for the drug trade, certainly part and parcel for the cartels. But terrorist organizations, why do you use that term?
Yeah, it's because of their actions. So when you look at what they're doing in Mexico, whether that's decapitating bodies, chopping them up, whether that is coercing local officials, assassinations, whether that is complete subversion of the local government themselves from the lower levels, whether that's your mayor, all the way up to the president, Sheinbaum herself. You know, being a mayor in Mexico is probably the most dangerous job there. And so that's why I, based off of current U.S. code, they meet the statutory definition of what a foreign terrorist organization is. Now, the problem that we have is everyone thinks that the Mexican cartels are not terrorist organizations because of ideology, that they don't have the same ideology as ISIS or Al-Qaeda or Hamas or Hezbollah, all the terrorist organizations in the Middle East. However, they do have an ideology as well. If you look at their ability to coerce or to influence the populations in their area via whether that's worshiping La Santa Muerte, the death saint, or even worshiping idols such as Malverde or even Chapo Guzman, placing a being or a known entity at the head of your organization for the protection of your criminal activity organization, a lot of times you can use this form of religion or cult to coerce or influence many portions of the population to work for you. And that's why there was a study that came out recently that showed that the Mexican cartels and their organizations are the fifth largest employer in Mexico. And I would say that's actually conservative, the majority of the numbers that they used were those that are in the battlefield, in the front lines, the sicarios, those that are conducting drug warfare or drone warfare inside of Mexico, not the farmers and ranchers that are cultivating their crops, not their businessmen or accountants, not their students that they kidnap to conduct, whether that's for cyber warfare, their warfare within the electromagnetic spectrum or what have you. And so the cartels, because they're in every single facet of our society, both in Mexico and along our border, that's why we state at Texas Public Policy Foundation that they are hybrid threats.
Students that they kidnap, cyber warfare, I can already see those bells going off in people's heads like, what's he talking about? What are you talking about?
Yeah, so when you look at the evolution of technology. Everyone's talking about artificial intelligence now and the evolution of how powerful technology is in your ability to either conduct simple tasks or to launder money or to move money itself, whether that's through blockchain technology, what have you. So every foreign terrorist organization or criminal organization worldwide also has these capabilities and capacities. And they're going to utilize technology to make sure that they can either launder the money, whether that's the proceeds from narcotics here in the United States through Chinese banking apps and other apps, but also to conduct cyber warfare, just like what Iran and their proxies or China and their proxies are doing. And in Mexico, they call them the cyber cartels. In fact, the amount of money that they're making conducting cyber operations inside of Mexico may surpass what they're making in terms of narcotics. And so this is a really big threat, but it's a really big threat worldwide. We just always simplify the cartels as just mere criminals. We never look at them as some global or international foreign terrorist organization. And so we put them in this little box and say, no, you guys are only you're only criminals. Therefore, you only have the capabilities and capacities of, say, like your mafia back in the 1920s. No, they are in 40 to 65 different countries. They're operating every capacity and capability that a terrorist organization has in the Middle East, every capability and capacity that Mexico as a state has in terms of their level of or ability to collect intelligence, their ability for spyware, you name it, their international telecommunications. They have everything that a nation state has.
Can we talk for a few about their involvement here and what we think their involvement or know their involvement may be with American politicians, mayors along the border, all the way up to, I mean, are we talking senators, members of the House of Representatives? Obviously, when you have that much money and you want American policy to be friendly to you, you're going to toss some of it around, or maybe it's threat to, what do we know about this?
Yeah, you know, this is kind of sad. I mean, as a Border Patrol agent, many Border Patrol agents know this, or if you're local law enforcement on the southern border, some guys to your left and right are working for the enemy. And we would end up having to work operations on the border on encrypted apps, not utilizing our radio systems, because we knew that there were dirty agents. And we called this trust betrayed. So if you think about it, the Mexican cartels inside the United States run more like an intelligence agency. They're foreign intelligence service agency. They run through corruption, co-option, and coercion. That way, they do that for a reason. They don't want the U.S. military going out there and completely wiping them out. They don't want the Trump administration to go there and completely drone strike them and completely destroy every bit of their operations. And so what they do is they would do it just like China does, and it works by their proxies. So in order to move their products from point A to point B, they have to corrupt local officials, Border Patrol, National Guard, the military, active duty military, judges, local officials, elected officials, your mayors, your governors, your sheriffs, everyone, so that they can move whatever they need to move across the international border. But it's more than that. It's also so that they can gain control of territory. Whenever you fought, Jesse, overseas, the whole idea and concept was for the military to gain control of a territory or terrain, right? The control of terrain is vastly important. Even in today's battlefield on Ukraine and Russia, the ability to control the ground terrain is important. You and I know that as infantrymen, how much terrain or control of terrain is so important to the battlefield. Same thing with the cartels. The control of terrain is so important that they're going to co-opt and coerce and corrupt every form and fashion of our society, to include our youth in high schools across the border, so that they can move their interior. Now, once they're in the interior, they're going to do the same things in our interior. So whether that is in Houston, whether that is in Chicago, New York, or your suburbs, even your rural areas, they need to maintain control of that territory so that they continue their illicit and licit operations on U.S. sovereign soil. So I would recommend your audience go and view. There is a great documentary done by National Geographic back in 2015 called Underworld Incorporated. And they had an episode called Human Cargo, where they followed a group of illegals from Mexico into Texas into Houston, where they were embedded in a stash house in Houston. So they were able to go there. The stash house was controlled by Sinaloa cartel, and they were able to interview them. And the cartel there themselves said that they controlled every facet of society in that neighborhood, from the local stores, the community members, just you name it. That way they can control or govern or completely operate with impunity in those regions. And this is on US soil. This was over a decade ago that this film was made. And so fast forward today, because we view the cartels as criminals and not as a hybrid threat or foreign terrorist organization, a lot of our investigations really end at the person involved at the lowest level of the crime. What do I mean by that? Well, when people smuggle narcotics, say like in a truckload at our port of entry, a lot of times we end up just apprehending and detaining and arresting the driver. A lot of times the investigation doesn't go further into that on what organization that they are working for, what smuggling organization and what cartel do they typically belong to. Because that a lot of times that takes a lot of time. And unfortunately, our system that our current law enforcement have doesn't really have the capability or capacity to do that. We run on the National Incident-Based Reporting System. And before that, it was the Uniform Crime Report System that was created in the 1920s. And so because of the outdated information and the lack of resources and capabilities and capacities and training that our local law enforcement have when they're conducting operations, our investigations usually end at the point of arrest. It typically doesn't go any further than that. And when it does, it takes years. For example, there was a case recently in Houston, this was under the Biden administration, where they indicted over 40 members that were linked to the cartel Jalisco New Generation. That investigation took 62 months for them to indict those members. 62 months. So you got to think, they're operating that entire time in Houston while we're conducting this investigation because we only see them as criminals. And then it ends there. So when you ask what elected officials are currently working for them, the only way that we can tell now, because usually the buck stops there, is by their actions in Congress or inaction in terms of border security, going after the cartels. So then you as citizens, you as journalists, then have to look and you have to piece it together. Are these elected officials, both at the Congress all the way down, making statements that the cartels are not a threat, that they're just criminals? Are they blocking our border security efforts? Are they refusing to acknowledge every facet or every illicit commodity that they're in, to include human trafficking, sex trafficking, narcotics trafficking? Are they involved in agriculture? If your congressmen and women are refusing to acknowledge the intelligence that's given to them and instead are enacting open borders, then you know that they have an agenda, and they could be, I'm not saying they are, they could be in bed with organizations such as the Mexican cartels.
How, and I'm sure that the answer to this obviously varies, as you mentioned, it's an intelligence organization, but when people hear Border Patrol agents are bent, you know, local cops, things like that, that begs the question of how they accomplish this. Is this as simple as a briefcase full of cash under the table? Is it a gun to your head? You work for me now? How do they take a Border Patrol agent and turn him, a sheriff and turn him? How do they do this?
Yeah. So if you remember, you probably remember from your training in the Marine Corps, whenever we'd go overseas, you'd had to have this training from our intelligence division saying, okay, certain forms of espionage are going to try to target certain soldiers, whether that's through money, bulk cash, like you said, whether that's through honeypots. We have a problem with that. In Congress, we have some members that have been with spies. They do the same thing. We call them on the border, we call them narco Barbies. If you're a border patrol agent and you're a two, and you have if you have this narco Barbie who's a 10 coming in and approaching you, there could be a reason. And so they use the same way that the Chinese or foreign intelligence service agencies use in terms of espionage to turn someone that they can utilize, whether that's information gathering, whether that's for security reasons or anything else like that. The Mexican cartels are going to utilize the same way. They're going to go to a Border Patrol agent. They're going to go to a National Guard. They're going to go to a local law enforcement. And based off of the value that you offer to their organization, whether you can tell them where to go to smuggle so that the cameras can't see them, whether you can bypass them at their port of entry because they're running a lane, whether they're a National Guard soldier and they can use their uniforms and smuggle human beings past Border Patrol checkpoints, that these organizations will seek after certain personnel just like a nation state and say, what does that person offer for us? What exactly, what powers, duties, and responsibilities do they have that if we gained access to, then we can continue with our operations? And that's how they see it. They see it just as a transactional piece in order to further their operations. And that's how they get Border Patrol agents. And we call it, we have an entire page called Trust Betrayed. Agents who work with the Mexican cartels and smuggling organizations and work with the enemy.
Gosh, that's amazing. It's so dark. All right, I'm going to ask you this. You've mentioned several times illicit and licit activities. A lot of people don't grasp this concept at all, that the cartels essentially are the government in places in Mexico, and it's not all cocaine and narco Barbies. What are these licit activities?
Yeah, think about what we need as a society. Do we need water? Well, yes. All of us need to drink water. Now, when I was in Iraq, all of us drank Rippets, right? And you were forced to hydrate with water. But so like in Mexico, you think, okay, if the populace needs to drink water, then I'm going to gain access and control of that water, whether that's to grow opiates or whether that's to like your opium fields or whether that's to grow just your agriculture. Water, they control water. Talk about telecommunication systems or internet-based systems. They're going to control that. That's also licit. That's a commodity that we use that is legal that the Mexican cartels then either co-opt, coerce themselves in there, or corrupt their way in there to gain control of that. So think of any other ways and means that they'll control. I mean, the reason why I bring up water so much, look, the 1944 treaty, we're allowing Mexico to completely dictate how much water they're giving to us inside in Texas. We've lost our sugarcane operations there in South Texas. But on the south side, what's not talked about, it's not just the river flow, but the direct access to the aquifers. And the aquifers have so much water reserved that, but we share those aquifers. And the Mexican cartels illegally tap into those, or they control those areas, those regions, to dip or create wells to dip into those aquifers and using them for their other means. Also, within inside the United States, think about the illicit trade of, say, like general contractor work. We all need general contractors to build our homes and build our buildings. What if that contractor was actually a front network for the Mexican cartels, who only hired illegal aliens so that way they could outbid every other domestic contractor? So that contractor themselves are now hiring the people that they brought over that now are indebted to them, paying them pennies through labor exploitation, outbidding American companies. And then so that way those American companies can't compete. They go out of business while the Mexican cartels thrive, not just thrive, but expand their business inside the United States. They're doing this everywhere, whether that is in, think of every aspect that the Mexican cartels utilize or where illegal aliens are really present, whether it's all of our blue collar trade, whether that is in our agriculture, you name it. The Mexican cartels are going to create actual legitimate businesses, are going to trade legitimate commodities, because under the USMCA agreements, they are protected And there's no level investigation right now to show that, hey, the cartels are actually controlling these in Mexico and that they're bringing them into the United States, protected by our own federal policies. And then they're completely disrupting and destroying our local domestic supply because we can't compete with their foreign or cheap labor. We can't compete with their regulations in Mexico. We can't compete with anything. And so we've offshored a lot of our companies because they go bankrupt in the U.S. We've offshored them into Mexico where they can completely use cheap labor. They can use zero regulations where they control your local population, that you can control your local governance systems and civil society. And unfortunately, we've created a system where we've now decreased our ability inside the United States for domestic production. You can think of every single thing that we're importing, whether that is automotive parts, whether that is our tech industry, whether that is our agriculture. Everything that we are importing and have offshored to Mexico, the Mexican cartels now have control over. Think about oil. Just recently, we helped Senator Sparks create an oil task force at the state legislature. We helped him pass that bill because now that the Trump administration is here and is focusing their efforts on fentanyl and focusing their efforts on illegal immigration, the Mexican cartels are like, okay, our numbers are decreasing in fentanyl, so we're just going to increase our illicit commodities, whether that's ag or now oil, and focus our efforts there. And so now we're seeing a massive increase in the amount of Mexican cartel control over the oil industry. So much so that we had to build our own task force in the state of Texas under the Texas Department of Homeland Security, which is also another new initiative that we helped draft, the SB 36 that passed this last session, in order to combat the level of illicit commodities, your oil, your agriculture, everything that you can think of that you need as a family inside the United States. If it is imported from Mexico, you know that the Mexican cartels now have their hands in it.
Yeah, Ammon, I'm sorry, but we're fresh out of time with you. I could go another 20 minutes. Man, come back soon. I appreciate you as always. Thanks for making us smarter, brother. Come back. All right. Drone warfare. Everybody by now understands that drone warfare is going to be part of warfare for the foreseeable future. John Solomon, the great John Solomon, joins us next to give us some other things that might make our eyes go, what? Hang on. I want you to feel full of energy, in a good mood. But what does that mean, in a good mood? Well, let me ask you something, especially for the guys. Do you feel down inexplicably? You're driving home, you're sitting around, you're at work, you just kind of feel melancholy and down. You understand that we're losing 1% of our testosterone a year, and it's not our fault. The estrogen's in the friggin' waters, we shower in it. We're drowning in estrogen, it's dropping our T levels, and now guys are getting depressed, guys are getting down, guys are losing energy, guys are losing focus. Remember, testosterone is about your mind more than anything else. Did you know you need it for logical thinking? And did you know you don't need a needle in your arm to get things turned around? Natural herbal supplements from Chalk will get things turned around for you. It's easy. Chalk.com/JesseTV. I take a male vitality stack every day. 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days. Go get a subscription. Let's see what I mean. Drone warfare. Again, we all, Russia, Ukraine, everybody who's paid attention for 5 seconds knows that drone warfare is taking place in Russia, Ukraine. You've heard about drones taking place over there. They're coming from Yemen, but it's happening here, right here as well. Joining me now, the wonderful John Solomon, founder of Just the News. They're just out there doing the best stuff all the time. John, El Paso. We woke up one day, we all rolled out of bed, and we got on our phones like everybody does, and we saw the airspace in El Paso was closed. What? What happened?
Yeah, pretty big deal. Well, we have these new drone detection capabilities that find penetrations quicker and faster than Lord knows Joe Biden did when he let that Chinese balloon traverse across the country for a week. They alert us quicker to unidentified flying objects, and then if they meet a certain shape or size, there is an opportunity to blow them out of the sky with non-missiles, things like lasers and other capabilities. And so something that resembled a drone or a balloon tipped off the system. We immediately closed down the airspace. A laser was used to disable that drone and bring it down to the ground. It really was a balloon, not a drone, but it looked like it. And then the airspace was reopened. That is the sort of rapid response that we want in America, not the sort of tortured excuse-making response we saw with the Chinese spy balloon a couple of years ago. Why are we this reactive now? Why do we have this capability? Because in the first 3 days of the second Trump presidency, President Trump signed a series of executive orders and told the National Security Council and the FBI, you take the lead and let's not have any more drones traversing our skies. And that's what happened. All of a sudden, the FBI created a counter-drone school. All of our major intelligence agencies and our FBI law enforcement and now local law enforcement getting trained how to detect and to disable a dangerous drone in real time. And then a task force led by Dr. Seb Gorka, who's the counterterrorism director in the White House, has been meeting weekly to get all of the components of government to come up with a comprehensive strategy and a comprehensive defense system so that what we saw happen on October 7th, 2023 in Israel, when that extraordinary terror attack occurred by Hamas, one of the first signs of that terror attack were some drones that were used by Hamas to disable listening and watch posts of the U.S., the Israeli military. Donald Trump doesn't want that to happen, and we are now in a position in real time to detect and disable anything that looks something like that.
John, can you help me understand, at least from the people you talk to, how many entities out there are using these things potentially for nefarious purposes? As you mentioned, Hamas, everyone's going to know that. Cartels, we all know that right now. Russia is, right. Ukraine is. Right. Who else is using this stuff?
Well, the Houthis, for sure. For a long time, Houthis in Yemen would only fire missiles, and then they watched what Ukraine and Russia were doing. Like, hey, missiles are expensive, drones are cheap. And then they began going to these more inexpensive drones to create the same sort of capabilities. And also, they realized, at least during the Biden years, that our drone detection was not nearly as comprehensive as our missile capabilities were. And so what's happening now, and by the way, you can pick something up tomorrow at a Best Buy or at a Walmart or at Amazon. It costs $1,000 that can carry a small payload, like maybe some germs. How about, you know, that bio lab that was recently uncovered in Vegas? What if someone wanted to take some nefarious pathogen, put it on a drone, fly it over farm field, kill the crops, or sicken a whole town or a Disney World? That is the capability that it does exist today. Fortunately, we haven't had a lot of those episodes yet in the world, but we know it's very possible, and the bad guys are thinking that way. And that's why we've created a what I would call a mini golden shield. And we got the Golden Dome Project, which is the Reagan fulfillment of Star Wars to protect us from missiles. But we've created a much more rapid response thing to detect these little tiny drones that can create big harm.
All right. You brought up Disney World. Before we move on to other things, I have to ask. I'm thrilled the United States of America, credit to the Trump administration, is taking this threat seriously. But I mean, it doesn't exactly take a genius to figure out, wow, we have 100,000 people who gather to watch college football games on Saturday. God knows how many people pass through Disney World on any given day. Are private companies being proactive about this, or are they lagging seriously behind?
That is a great question. So let's break them down into three categories, because we are seeing threats in all three categories. There are public operators of pipelines, which could create a catastrophic incident if a drone blew up a little section of a pipeline and we started spilling massive amounts of oil and gas or cut off energy supply to a part of our country. Those companies are right alongside the FBI and the Homeland Security right now in upping their game on a daily basis. And in fact, those companies use their own drones to fly over the pipelines and look for instant threats and try to detect them in real time. So infrastructure is one category. There is a really good, strong sign due diligence and preparation and proactive planning. Then there are major events, the Super Bowl, the Oscars, the Olympics. We're going to have the big FIFA World Cup here in America this year. Those are getting high priority because the FBI and the Homeland Security Department reach those private partners weeks and months in advance, and they plan for not only to have the normal screening of terrorists, but now the counter-drone capabilities, which didn't exist very well in the Biden administration. Then go downstream from there. What about the local theater? What about the shopping mall? They're soft targets. They've always been the biggest concern that the FBI and Homeland Security Department have. I remember covering a congressional hearing 2 decades ago when Bob Mueller was still the FBI director, and they asked him, "Director, what keeps you up awake at night?" And he said, "Terrorists finally deciding that with backpacks and drones, they could attack a soft target like a mall and a church, and we wouldn't got there." That is a place where we're growing in our capabilities, but we're not as strong. Now, as far as drones are concerned, one of the great things is that wherever a drone takes off, our shield now can detect something that isn't declared as an FAA device. And so even if you're a mile from the school and you want to blow up a school, in real time now, our infrastructure is able to detect that drone when it starts to take off and say, "That's not a declared drone. What is that?" And it can scramble things in real time to even something that's a soft target like a school. But when you get down to the smaller targets, the malls and the schools and places like that, that is still an area of concern, and there is not 100% coverage yet, but that's what that task force is meeting, to try to get better and better at defending it. By the way, this thinking didn't exist 18 months ago. The Biden administration was pretty much asleep at the switch.
John, are there foreign countries getting involved in our elections to make sure Democrats win?
Oh, you asked such a leading question that I know I want to answer more. I'm working very hard to answer that question in a very comprehensive way. But let me give you 2 data points that we weren't given in the 2020 election when Chris Wray, the FBI director, said no foreign intrusions, when Chris Krebs said it was a perfect election, when the Georgia official said everything was fine. We now know with absolute certainty, because I've made the documents public, that the Iranian government and 2 hackers hacked into a one battleground state's voter database. We still don't know the state publicly, but we know it's a big state. And more than 100,000 voter IDs were downloaded by these Iranian hackers. And then those IDs were used for what the government now says in an indictment were for malign influences. I want to tell you that that indictment didn't get unsealed until a year after Joe Biden was president. Most media have never covered that case, but it completely contradicts what we were told in 2020. There was no foreign intrusions. And we know that the FBI and the Homeland Security knew about it because the indictment refers to the government's awareness all the way back to May of 2020. So that's one instance we were not told about, and most people still don't know about it, except for those who read our site. We're one of the few places that reported on it. More recently, we obtained FBI documents showing that the FBI discovered that China had sent tens of thousands of driver's licenses to Chicago O'Hare Airport in August of 2020 in a plot to help Joe Biden get more votes counted in absentee ballots. They were fake driver's licenses. They were going to go to some destination, probably a voter mill or a voter registration mill, to create that. That is something that you're not going to read in the New York Times or Washington Post, but those documents are now in public thanks to Tulsi Gabbard and to Kash Patel and a couple of others, Pam Bondi, who've gotten them out. I believe that those 2 incidents are not the only poles to that story. I believe in the next few weeks, I know from my reporting, we're going to learn of a series of other massive intrusions that have put many state databases at risk and for which the United States government has been silent for the last 5 years. I think when we get those data points, we're going to know a little bit more about just how active our government has been in knowledge and how little they've actually told even the states and all of us in the American public. And I think these new details, these new intercepts, the new intrusions that have been detected, are likely to raise the question that these foreign actors are working with operatives, Americans on the ground in America, to try to achieve these plans. Whether they've succeeded, still to be determined. But the idea that a foreign power is working with Americans to create some sort of intervention in our election should scare all of us. Doesn't matter your political stripe.
John, I'll let you go. No more leading questions for me today. I'll be reading just the
question.
News.
Good
I'll find
question.
Out myself. Let's see you, brother. All right. We'll have some final thoughts. Next. A huge weight. That's what high interest debt feels like. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Well, hopefully you don't, but maybe you're in the middle of it right now, carrying this 20, 30% interest rates. It takes over your everything. You think about going out to eat. You think about your debt. You wake up in the morning. You think about your debt. You think about the interest on your debt. And what it feels like is there's no light at the end of the tunnel. It's just a black hole of bills for the rest of your life. Well, that's where American financing comes in. You have a mortgage? You have high interest debt? American financing is here with solutions. Have you actually reached out to them yet to figure out what your solutions are? It's time. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Get a hold of them. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse. The tunnel is not never-ending dark, I promise. Call them, 866-891-2821. Yes, we have domestic problems here. We have, let's be honest, domestic enemies here. They're called Democrats. There's no question about that. But we also have to be aware we do have foreign enemies who work with our domestic enemies. It's a lot to take in, but they're a problem over there, but also they're a problem right here. This is why we have to have these conversations about cartels, about who's getting involved in our elections. We have to have conversations about drones, drone warfare. We're going to keep having these chats on this show because I learn when you learn, all right? We'll do it again.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.